Are you dealing with a high conflict bio mom? HCBM is what they're referred to in the chat rooms, which, by the way, I hate the term high conflict BM. I will talk more about that later. But here's the deal. When I ask stepmoms who come into my world what the hardest part is and why they decided to work with me or connect with me, they usually say something about the ex. So she's high conflict, or she's controlling. She manipulates my husband. She influences the kids. So the list goes on, but it usually has to do with the ex. And dealing with an ex, especially a high conflict one, can be very costly. It can cost money on lawyer's bills. It can cost you time dealing with the bullshit. It can cost you your mental health. And it can cost precious moments that really should be spent on people and things who light you up. Life is short. The question I have for you is, are you done with the bullshit? Are you done with the BS? We used to have a very high conflict co-parenting relationship. There was an incident where there was some yelling at the front door over some hockey pants. There were altercations over the phone, long-winded text messages, email correspondence, like countless dollars spent on lawyers' bills and court dates and vacation requests. It's just a few examples. I remember when Darren and I first got together, I walked in on him and the ex arguing in the driveway about extra expenses. It was so uncomfortable. It was so unnecessary. And it was so costly. And if I could go back, there are so many things that I would do differently. But now we have really been able to transform our higher conflict co-parenting relationship, and I want to help you get here too. So on March 26th, I am hosting a live coaching experience. It is a masterclass for stepmoms who want to minimize conflict with the high conflict ex. You can find all the details at www.jamiescrimshaw.com/high-conflict-masterclass. But for 1 hour, I'm going to share tips and strategies and mindset shifts that you can implement right away to minimize conflict with the ex and improve the vibe of your home. You get a recording, a workbook, tips, strategies that are going to save you time, money, and anxiety. This masterclass will change the way that you look at the ex and your co-parenting relationship. It's happening March 26th. It is a masterclass for stepmoms who want to minimize conflict with the high conflict ex. Head to www.jamiescrimshaw.com/high-conflict-masterclass to secure your spot. Hey, it's Jamie Scrimger. When I became a stepmom, I quickly realized that while moms are encouraged to keep it real, there's a big double standard when it comes to stepmoms. So I decided to start the conversation myself. Thriving as a stepmom doesn't just come from conversations about being a stepmom, though. Here, we dive into marriage, relationships, personal growth, and more. My mission? Inspire you to live a kick-ass life while bringing you along as I create my own. This is the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. Jodi Carrington is a renowned psychologist, best-selling author, sought after for her expertise, energy, and approach to helping people solve the most complex human-centered challenges. And if you ask me, I would say co-parenting and being a stepmom would probably fall into the category of complex human-centered challenges. And boy, did she bring it on this episode. Jodi focuses much of her work around reconnection and what she believes is the key to healthy relationships. So we really rip on it all in this episode. It has such great energy, so real, so relatable, and I'm just so grateful that Jodi took the time. So we talk about reconnection as being a tool for improving your co-parenting relationship. Empathy, what is really going on for the kids when they're dealing with loyalty binds? Or maybe they're going back to their mom's house and saying, you know, my stepmom did this or my dad did this, when in your mind you had a really great relationship. We also talk about things we can do to improve the mom-stepmom relationship, things to be careful not to say to the kids, and the power of grace in the human experience. I know I keep saying this, but I feel like the episodes just keep getting better and better. This is for sure one of my favorites. Let's dive in. Jodi Carrington, welcome to the podcast.
Jamie, listen, I'm so excited to be here.
I know. You know what? You came with the energy. I was like, I always follow you on Instagram and I'm like, the energy, I think it's just across the board for you, eh?
I don't have any other option. I think that when you're closing in on 50 and you have three personal children and every day you want to, you know, change the world, I feel like there's no other option. Like you really can't. It's not like, you know, we're going to fucking give it our best shot on this day. And I don't know. Like, I just feel like so much, like, here's what I think is that I'm really funny. Nobody else really knows or thinks that necessarily, but I think I'm fucking hilarious. And I think we wake up with us for the rest of our lives. And if there's not any capacity to have some good time in this process of this whole disastrous world that we've never felt more disconnected in, man, what's the point? You know?
Mm-hmm. I love that. You know what? Before we dive into all the things, you just said something, you're like almost 50. Like, tell me about your 40s. Cause I'm like coming up to my 40s and I feel like I'm jacked. I have heard so many women tell me that their 40s are the decade that they really just arrived. They feel awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I've never really reflected back on my 40s yet because I'm 48 and I, you know, I guess I'm feeling like a little bit like I'm pumping the brakes to get into, you know, this 50th decade. But I think, I mean, for me, it was the most remarkable. I wrote 3 books. I watched our babies, you know, do incredible things. I have navigated the role of figuring out how to be who I am, which has really changed the way that I show up as a, you know, a leader and I'm for sure a mom. That changes every second. Mm-hmm. But even just, you know, trying to keep our marriage together and, you know, what that's like in this current climate and, you know, how you do that, I feel like it was such years of growth for me. And we expect, I think, earlier to sort of come to those fruition, but I felt like I was just barely hanging on in my 20s. And my 30s was really so much about, again, not really breathing. And I feel like 40 was a time where it was like, okay, let's take some stock. We got some shit to do here. And I, like, I have to tell you, I think 50 is going to be the best decade, mostly because Oprah said it was her best decade. And so I'm like, that's always been in my head that it's going to be the best decade. But I feel like there was a meme or something the other day that just really made me stop my tracks where it's like, today is your best day. Like when you look at an image of yourself, today is your best day. And you know how we always look back at photos of like, oh, I wish I would have really felt what that was like to be in that moment with my children or my stepchildren. I really felt like, you know, I wish I was like in my body in that moment because like my God, things were so good in that moment. And it was just really this conversation about like, today's your best day. Like take all the fucking pictures because mm-hmm. you're going to look back at this day and be like, huh, that was pretty good. You know?
So good. I love what you just said. I felt like I could barely breathe in my 30s because I feel like I'm just starting to breathe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I feel like that wouldn't have made sense to me until like 6 months ago.
Really?
Yeah. Just like you could barely breathe. But it's true. I think in our 30s, just as women and as moms and stepmoms, we're still figuring out who we are and trying to please everyone and do the things for everyone. And our worth is wrapped up in the caregiving and all the things. And I don't know. For me, I've just recently got to the point where I'm like, okay, wait, who am I in this? Like, who am I in all of this? Who's Jamie?
Right. The heaviness of children for me is what I think completely messed me up. Like, I've been having a lot of conversation about this, right? So I got a PhD in child psychology. I mean, I worked as a child psychologist for 6 years before we had our own children, and I've never felt more incompetent in my life. Like fears for their safety, for like, was I going to mess them up? Like, what happens if all those things? I really, really underestimated what that was going to do, especially when I had already developed a career prior to that. Right. So like I created everything that I knew to be about, you know, who I was as a doctor, what I was as a, you know, somebody who was creating a life, obviously with my husband and what that looked like. And then came these babies that I was just like, whoa, I'm not prepared because I feel like I have zero control over these life sucking cayus that I feel like I'm screwing up every second. And like, I have a script for it. I just don't know what the hell to do. So I feel like now when I look at my children, and this is our own stories that always come into this, but when I look at, you know, my children now, I'm enjoying them so much. Like our twins are 11. I still feel like I'm screwing them up every day, but like our twins are 11, our oldest is 13. And they crack me up. Like they're the most ridiculous humans. And of course, my daughter in particular is going to send me to an early grave. But I really feel like I often said when the twins turned 4, I felt like I had some freedom. I felt like I could sort of figure out who I was again. And I think like sleeping has a lot to do with it. And then being able to now navigate their physical safety as they get older and bigger. And you know this, you know, as your stepkids are getting older. I mean, like, I remember being so mortified that I was going to give the wrong doses of medication or like what was happening when the babies were little. And my father said to me, little kids, little problems, big kids, bigger problems. And I was like, whoa, holy shit, it gets worse than this. Like, I'm out.
Oh, yeah. We were just in Mexico and we were in the elevator and there was this woman and her partner there and they had, I'm going to say a 3-year-old. And they were just like, oh, we're just, you know, we're pooped. We're done for the day. We were all going out for dinner. She's like, you know, can't wait till like one day we have some freedom and it gets, you know, it gets easier. Da, 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 and we were there with all the kids and we had boyfriend and girlfriend. Like we had a whole crew there.
Oh yeah.
And so like bringing a 21-year-old, 19-year-old, 17-year-old to Mexico, like I was like, I would really love to be going to bed right now with my baby. Like it does not get easier.
No kidding. You are locked in the room. You're in your playpen. I know exactly where you are versus like, no, no.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just not ready. I'm really not ready for any of it, I think. But in the same moment, I think so much of this is interesting in this place of this generation of women really, really don't have a script in the expectation of how do you navigate, you know, creating your own career, if that's, you know, what you choose or what you sort of do in the community. And this is the thing I've been thinking about a lot lately. We've never had this much access to our children and they've never had this much access to us. So there really is no capacity to put it down in any run of any day, right? Like all of us, everybody I know anyways, carries a phone, right? I'm speaking specifically this privilege in North America, obviously, but it's when I think about my dad at the end of the day, he would go home at 5:30 at night and nobody could get him. His customers, his patients, his clients, like anybody could not get him. Mm-hmm. Only the house phone. Particularly. And if we were eating a meal that you just didn't answer the house phone. Okay. So there was this opportunity to decrease your cortisol, right? And even when I went away to college, I remember thinking, you know, I would have access to the phone in our dorm Tuesdays. That's when I would phone home. And the other 6 days, nobody had a fucking clue. Like you just hoped for the best. You know what I mean? And I remember clearly my mom saying every weekend you would come home, I wouldn't sleep because I would lay there, wait for you to come home. But then you would go to college and no doubt you're at the bar every night or doing whatever you were doing in college. But I had no control over that. Like it was just like, okay. And I think about now how we wake up in the mornings. Most of us charge our phones by our bed, which, you know, again, I think is the problem to everything. But anyway, me included, because I do this. We don't even pee and we get the updates on TeamSnap or what's happening in the world of, you know, our children's friends. Then we're checking our respective emails and then we're just, oh, like we scroll before we just, you know, even get up in the morning. And then we're like, oh, you fuck, she's drinking collagen. God damn it. We need family pictures, you know, and your shoulders are up and then you send them to school, but you know, your body knows that they can get you anytime, any moment. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is we all carry the phone. And if we're going to miss it, don't worry, because I got this on my watch will buzz if I happen to miss something. And then at the end of the day, we're so exhausted because we've done whatever we do, access to media all the time. Our brain never gets a break. And then the capacity to sink into our own people at the end of the day are significantly compromised because we're exhausted. Mm-hmm. All we want to do is sink into somebody. And we have so many exit ramps. We want to sink into our Netflix show or we want to, you know, playing board games is something we had to do on purpose in our little house, which we do maybe once a month. Otherwise, everybody is in their own worlds and we are not looking or talking or understanding anybody, mm-hmm. you know?
That's so true.
And I think about like, the data is interesting. Our great grandparents looked at their children 72% more of the time than we look at our babies.
I know. I heard you say that on a video on your Instagram and I was like, whoa, it's very true. Except for my daughter. She's with me attached to my hip all the time, which is a whole other podcast. But yeah, it's very true. And even you were talking about kind of the discomfort sometimes of like looking someone in the eye.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So the human race, whoever started us, it doesn't matter to me what you believe in, but like, you know, Jesus or Buddha or the creator or the Big Bang Theory, doesn't matter. The human race comes with two rules. Whoever made us said, I'm going to make you neurobiologically wired for connection. Okay. So you disconnect from an infant, they die. We need each other. The healthiest among us are the most connected. Okay. And in fact, we need many people to stay alive if we want to. The second rule, though, which is sort of like a curveball, says, despite the fact that you are neurobiologically wired for connection, I'm going to make it so that the hardest thing you will ever do is look at each other. Okay. So good luck. And people doubt this all the time, but I promise you, like if you know, you're listening to this podcast, I mean, I want you to really try to look into the eyes of the people that you love today. And you know, there's this beautiful research by Anne and her colleagues and they talk a lot about like the 4 minutes of connection, how hard it truly is to sit with anybody you love or, you know, you care for, you have a relationship with it, and just look at them for 4 minutes. It is the longest period of time it feels like on the planet. And when I speak, I even say this to rooms of people, like, you know, we're sitting in this auditorium or this gym or wherever we are, just make eye contact with somebody in the room. And it is so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. People prefer to just look at me or cross their arms. Or if they do look at each other, they're like sticking their tongues out and like being ridiculous and like getting right up close to each other, you know? Because the hardest thing we will do is look into the eyes of the people we love. And why that is so important is in our generation, right? We're the first generation of parents with access to social media. In our generation, we have never had so many opportunities to look away. And if the hardest thing we will do is look at each other, and now we have so many exit ramps, we will take them. When you get into an elevator, everybody looks at their phone. I was watching at the beginning of a gym class, you know, we were all sitting around on our yoga mats waiting for the gym class to start. Nobody's talking to each other. We're all on our phones. Mm-hmm. What happens when you, you know, go to dinner with people? Like even if you and I went to dinner, our body keeps the score of everything that we do. And even the fact that I see your phone sitting on the table, I know that you have many other opportunities and that you'll probably take them if it's your children or if it's your other best friend or if it's whatever. And what that does from a neurophysiology, even a psychological perspective, is really puts the disconnect between the two of us, right? I was saying this to Sarah Nicole Landry yesterday. We did a podcast of Birds Papaya. You know her?
I was on her podcast yesterday too. I saw you on Instagram.
Oh my God,
you
were, did it I'm on like, the same.
I know. I said, what are the chances of that?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And I was saying to her yesterday, you know, one of my favorite places where I feel the safest is on a plane because I travel probably 200 days a year, usually with my CEO and my best friend, Marty. So we're together. And I know for that, whatever, I mean, here to Toronto is 4 hours. So I know for those 4 hours, if I'm not logged onto the internet, nobody can get me. Mm-hmm. And I can just rest because even if something's happening with the babies, even if, you know, something's happening to my parents or Aaron or whatever the deal is, there's not anything I can do about it until I land. And we have very little opportunities these days, unless we lose a phone or get into a place where there's no access to data. And it's frightening for so many of us, mm-hmm. right? But that's how every generation that came before us lived. And our body doesn't have a script for this much intel.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been really working on my own anxiety.
Yeah.
And so I was on anxiety medication for a long time. Then I forgot it when I went on a trip.
Yeah.
And I was fine. So I was like, okay, well, I've already done like 4 days, 5 days. So I might as well just like go a little crazy and come off this, right? And coming off it, because I've done a lot of personal growth and all my triggers and my childhood and why I've experienced things the way, like the whole thing.
Okay.
And so I'm seeing things different than before I went on. And I've realized just how much my environment affects my anxiety, mm-hmm. right? So before mm-hmm. I was on meds, so really nothing bothered me. It was kind of nice, like mm-hmm. literally nothing bothered me. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of emotion about things, was pretty easygoing. And then I started to see the connection between my screen time and my phone and just stuff coming in at me, alerts, and my anxiety.
Yeah.
And how I was showing up as a mom and how I was showing up. And I was thinking the other day, it's funny you bring up the landline. I love to put my phone on do not disturb, but then my husband was like, I really needed to get a hold of you. And it's just going right to voicemail and like all these things. And I had gotten rid of our landline. There's part of me that wants to bring the landline back mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and have that emergency, but then, you know, not have to be on my phone all of the time because we do need to be able to disconnect. And, you know, we need our kids to be able to get a hold of us. Well, do we? Like my dad was fine too, right? Yeah. But like in our mind, it's super interesting. There's this app, Opal. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's Opal, O-P-A-L. And I downloaded it about 6 months ago. And so it blocks apps during certain times of the day. And I know your iPhone has the capacity to do that, but it's really easy to override that, right? Just with your code.
Okay.
But Opal, you go to the app that's, it's blocked during those times, or you can go into like a work session and say like, I need to work right now. You know, you do that. And then you're like, ooh, Instagram, right?
Yeah.
And it makes you think for 10 seconds before it allows you to override.
Wow.
And so then you're like, even last night, I got off my screens at 7. And then at like 7:30, I wanted to like look at this dress. I was like, I think I was going to order it. And I went to go on and I was like, oh, no, this is not my best self, right? Like, but it makes you think about how you really want to feel. And do you really need to go on and do you really need to numb?
Oh, cool. The pause.
So I think it's such a cool app. Yeah. Anyway, Opal, highly recommend.
Opal, I'm on it. I'm writing it down.
I want to tell you something. There was a time in my life when I would never spend money on pajamas. I don't even think I really had pajamas. I wanted to invest my funds into things that I would wear outside of the house. When I had to buy my first sheet set, I did not understand why someone would invest in anything but the least expensive sheets possible. That was me in my early 20s. Now that I'm in my late 30s, I realize just how wrong that was. Investing in bedding and loungewear and pajamas makes all the sense in the world. My go-to, as you know, is Cozy Earth. From their PJs to their loungewear to their temperature-regulating sheets made from bamboo viscose, Cozy Earth has helped me level up my quality of sleep and how I feel when I'm in lounge mode. The first thing that I do when I get home is either switch into a cozy bamboo jogger set or right into my PJs. Sleeping in my duvet cover and sheet set made from the premium viscose bamboo is like a freaking dream. Temperature regulating sheets are definitely the move. It is no surprise that Cozy Earth has made Oprah's favorite things several years in a row. Their products are next level, and these are the softest clothes that I own. Right now, I'm actually in the process of going through all of my clothes and purging things that don't make me feel or look great. And most of my loungewear is out. I'm all about the Cozy Earth. The best part of the loungewear is that it just doesn't look sloppy. You can totally go out of the house and look completely put together. I even wore a set recording podcasts last week. Now, Cozy Earth has given listeners of the podcast 40% off any purchase with the code COZYJAMIE40. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code COZYJAMIE40 for 40% off. www.CozyEarth.com and use the code COZYJAMIE40 for 40% off. Okay, we are going on a family trip. We got a family vacation to Mexico, leaving in a week, and the whole freaking crew is going. And I am working on packing everyone up. Yes, I am helping the kids pack. Even though they're teenagers and young adults, I am making sure that they have everything that they need. Everyone has nice outfits for dinner and just all the things. And because we have so many people in this family, and we're bringing my stepson's girlfriend and my stepdaughter's boyfriend, we have a couple rooms. One of the things that I'm making sure that we all have in our rooms is Element. So Element is my go-to electrolyte drink mix. It has everything you need and nothing you don't. That means lots of salt, no sugar, no artificial ingredients, coloring, etc. Just no BS. It is formulated to help anyone with their electrolyte needs, and it's perfectly suited if you are following a keto or a low-carb or a paleo diet. It is perfect for professional athletes, for everyday moms. It's really for everyone. I'm obsessed, and I have been for a couple of years now. They have been sponsoring the podcast for a year or so now. It is just so aligned. Lately, I have been loving it during hot yoga classes, when I need to rehydrate, when I'm traveling, and you know, after some cocktails. And when I'm away, I try to stay away from the sugary drinks. So I will get some soda and tequila and lime and fresh mint and throw some lime electrolyte salt in there. So lime element salt into my glass, and it is so freaking good. So 100 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 600 of magnesium. Staying hydrated is crucial and is a huge priority of mine. And proper hydration isn't just about drinking water. You gotta have adequate water and electrolytes. So I have a code for you. When you purchase Element from www.drinklmnt.com/kickassstepmom, you can get a free sample pack so you can try all the flavors and pick your faves. I love lime and watermelon. Those are my two go-tos. You get to choose what you love and what is best for you. So when you purchase Element from www.drinklmnt.com/kickassstepmom, you can get a free sample pack so you can try all the flavors. That's www.drinklmnt.com/kickassstepmom for a free sample pack with purchase. love to talk about your work. Your work's all around reconnection. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you mean by that. I have so many thoughts. I've been diving into your work and then how it relates to like the step parenting and co-parenting and all that stuff. And reconnection. Why do we need to reconnect?
Well, I think for a really long time, you know, when we talk about the world is so disconnected, we say connection is the key, right? And the interesting thing about connection is it's the easy part. If I were to give somebody a compliment or go on a first date or try to, you know, just wave at my name, connect to people, that's not the hard part. The hard part is what do you do when, not if, things fall apart? What do you do when, not if, you have your first argument or, you know, your kids push back and say, you're the worst mom ever. I hate you. What do you do when you say something in an argument that is asinine and you know it, but you just fucking said it anyway, right? The hardest part, I think, in this life is really our capacity to reconnect. And it's interesting because John and Julie Gottman, who've done sort of some of the most profound work in relationships and marriage, would say that the greatest predictor of couples who make it and couples that don't isn't how much you fight or how much money you have or how much sex you have or what your blended family looks like or not. It is your capacity to repair when things fall apart that is the greatest predictor of couples who make it. And we have less and less opportunities to reconnect in front of our children. Because we live in bigger houses, we spend more time apart. And often if we do have a fight, either we just go on with our days and don't continue, or we repair over text message. And you can't tell kids how to do this. You have to show them. And part of our ability to reconnect with each other is actually, you know, doing this in a place where other people know how to do it. So, you know, for example, we're not born with the capacity to mourn. We all have the capacity to grieve. But the only way we learn how to mourn is when we show people what to do when somebody dies. So one generation ago, two generations for sure, when somebody died up the road, generally speaking, all of us would go and we would take something and the kids would be in the room. Sometimes the body was in the parlor, all of those things. Like this is not a long time ago. Now the question is, you know, how old does a kid have to be to go to a funeral? I don't want to see them cry, you know, all these, you know, and then the pandemic came and we suspended things like weddings and funerals for the physical safety of our respective communities. And what we've lost in that capacity is to show people how to deal with hard emotions. And I can tell you all day long how to apologize. You need to say you're sorry. But the experience of doing that and navigating the response to that takes practice. It takes observation. It takes an ability to engage. And it often takes an emotional regulation that women tend to be far more skilled at than men. And our ability to engage in that reconnection with our communities, on our teams, in the world, I think becomes some of the most important things on the planet. And the more disconnected we are, I think that's the biggest price we pay. And it's evidenced in things like highest rate of suicide in our country is middle-aged men. Second marriages fail at a higher rate than first marriages. And oftentimes, if you didn't have the capacity to repair at one point, you have better figured out how to do the work with your next partner, whatever that looks like, or the same things will become your demise. Mm-hmm. It's not about falling in love or connecting to people that become the hard part. It is staying there that is the issue. That's where the work is.
Yeah, that's so important. And here's your ability to kind of bounce back and allow everyone to be human too. I do think, you know, when we're in like I keep thinking back, I guess, to like co-parenting conflict or you're dealing with a high conflict co-parenting situation. I don't like when people are saying when you're dealing with a high conflict ex, because it's just this label and it's a high conflict situation, right? But if you don't have the ability to allow people to be human and know that when you're activated, when you're dysregulated, you're not acting as your best self. Like I heard you say something, you're talking about, you know, you write books and like provide support on like parenting and all these things. But you said like, if you saw me when I was like dysregulated and yelling at my kids, you wouldn't read anything that I wrote. And it's true, right? Like,
yeah,
we can all show up and be our best selves when we're regulated in that perfect space, right? But how do we respond when we're dealing with hurt or feeling attacked or our ego's bruised or like whatever is going on?
And I think here's the thing that I believe to be true. And like I've sat with people who've had their children apprehended. I've, you know, been in prisons with people and, you know, sort of the most asinine experiences. And I believe this to the core of every human I've ever met. You are good. And so many of us lose access to the good. And when we lose access to the good, then our ability to navigate relationship and parent and lead and do all those things become significantly compromised. It's not that we lose our skill. It's that we lose access to it. And when we look at this super dysregulated world, particularly when, you know, you're going to threaten my child, or the, my perception is that you are, you know, telling my kids some things, or that now you're going to be a part of their lives when I don't get to be. It is sort of like a perfect storm for emotional dysregulation, where we lose access to the good, right? And when I think about the percentage of people who will navigate divorce, right, far over 50% on this in our country, which means one in every two families are in this situation where their shoulders are up, okay? Because the greatest ingredients of emotional dysregulation are things like uncertainty, fear, no end in sight. Those three things are often present when two families are attempting to divorce or reintegrate, or, you know, reintegrate other children of their life. Uncertainty, fear, no end in sight, which tends to give us the least capacity to be our best selves. And so what becomes so critical in this process is not about, you know, how do we get the other guy to do the thing? It's really about how we get back to the best parts of ourselves. Because in that place, I have all the capacity in the world to navigate the hard emotions. It doesn't mean I forgive or condone or support your respective actions, but I will have the capacity to lead through it or walk through it so much easier. And the biggest motivator, you know, when I get to work with couples that are navigating these things, the greatest motivator is our children, because they're watching. You can't tell them how to do it, right? And people say, you know, often, no, I never speak about the other in front of the other. You know, we're very careful about that. It's such bullshit, because kids could feel it from the parking lot, you know?
Yeah.
And I think what's so critically important is that, you know, people often want me as a child psychologist to see their children, you know, during a divorce or doing a, you know, whatever. The kids are the least of the worry. If the big people aren't okay, the little people don't stand a chance, right? So when people say to me, I really need you to see my children, you know, we're worried about them. And I always say, oh my God, I would absolutely love to assess them. I want to make sure we're not missing anything, but I need to see you too. And people say, oh, what, you think I'm the problem? I always say,
yeah,
no, you're not the problem. You're the solution. You understand? Mm-hmm. It should be hard for kids to transition. The division of loyalty, especially the littler your brain is, you cannot hold loyalty for two people at one time. So when I'm trying to transition and, you know, daddy picks me up or mommy picks me up, and the question out of your mouth is, how was the visit? How was the week? The expectation isn't often, oh my God, it was so fun. I had the best time. I so love my stepmom. She is so bad. Generally speaking, the expectation is, and even though we don't want this for our children, the expectation is, it was fine. She's a bit of a bitch, like, fuck, I can't do anything right, or whatever the deal is. You're like, I bet. Mm-hmm. And we don't intend that necessarily, right? But like, yeah, we are human too. And so the greatest work comes in holding the emotion of the big people so that their babies don't have to.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, often I'll hear stepmoms say they had such a great weekend with their stepkids. Like, it was amazing. Everything was great. And then the kids go back to their moms and they get a call, or dad gets a call saying that stepmom did this, they are unhappy with this, this is going on. And they're like, wait, they're blindsided. Wait, what's going on? And I think it's important to remember on both sides, in a lot of these situations, these kids, they got to survive both environments, right? They want to please mom, they want to connect with mom. And they're seeing, when I say these things about my stepmom, for example, because they know that she's not really liked by mom, mom's going to approve of that. That's going to make mom happy. That's going to make mom feel loved.
Yeah.
And I think as parents, we have to be super careful of that, that the kids aren't just doing that to do that, to connect.
And then we tend to turn on the children, or we turn on the other parent. The issue is, the job of little people is to lose their friggin' minds. The job of big people is to walk them through it. Your ability to know that it is often not safe for them, not because the other parent is awful, you know, may or may not be, but the story is that little brains can't hold loyalty to two people at one time. And so when they successfully transition back, they're going to come into your home sometimes with like, this is stupid. I hate this kind of food. My room isn't clean, or like whatever the deal is, right? That isn't a direct reflection of you. how you respond to that matters way more than the content of the message, mm-hmm. right? Here's the three words that allow me to sort of hold space when I know a kid's going to make a transition, either to me or away from me. You know, many people, when they transition kids back and forth between homes, talk about sort of like that golden place in the middle. Once they come back and they get into a routine and everything sort of goes okay, and then the anticipatory anxiety of going back, even if it is their favorite place in the world, where to, you know, coming to your house or going to theirs or whatever it is, the unpredictability of that transition often results in our children losing access to the best parts of themselves. So they're more irritable, or they're anticipating, or, you know, all those things start to happen, which has nothing to do with us. Our job is just to hold space for those emotions. And of course, when it's unacceptable or inappropriate or unsafe, I mean, that's our job to take charge. But most of the time, I want you to think about the importance of holding space for that, right? This is so stupid. We got here at 7, and what do you mean there's not even any dinner made, Jamie? Right? Now, what's really hard about that is that you don't get emotionally dysregulated. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? But in your head, you can feel all of those things, which is totally normal. Here's the three words that allow me to hold space. If I can keep my shit together, and keep in mind, you only need to keep your shit together 30% of the time. You're allowed to lose your freaking mind too. But here's the three words that often save my ass. Tell me more. Tell me more. And oftentimes that gives you a beat to keep your shoulders down, to recognize that these kids are put in, listen, I mean, according to the Adverse Childhood Experiences research, one of the sort of foremost, it's been around forever, but understanding one of the most traumatic things a kid will experience between the ages of 0-18 is the divorce of their parents. Mm-hmm. Not because it isn't potentially the best for the family system in the end, but going through that experience is one of the top 10 most traumatic things a kid will experience. And so giving the kid the benefit of the doubt and not assuming that it's because we messed them up or because of our decisions or because of, you know, dad's decisions or whatever that is left us in this place, the chaos is necessary to learn the calm. They should get dysregulated. It should be difficult to transition. Things don't feel the same or look the same or sound the same when they're in one home. And making that transition means they also worry about the other parent. They wonder about they miss the other parent. Mm-hmm. And it becomes very difficult then to navigate, or they miss the step parent, right? When they're away from each other, it just doesn't, you know, mean that primary parents or biological parents like take precedent. But it's very hard to miss the other parent in the presence of the parent that is physically present, you know, because it's not what we tend to want to hear, you know, even as a stepmom. Well, I really miss my mom. Mm-hmm. I really wish I could go home. And you know that sometimes, like, I bet you do, babe. I bet you do. Mm-hmm. This is so hard to have to do this.
And that's not personal.
No.
It's not personal at all.
For sure. Right. Yeah. And, you know, like, I think being able to sort of just acknowledge that becomes your, you can't fix it. You're not that good. Mm-hmm. Think of something else or take a deep breath. Let's get a snack. I bet this does suck.
Yeah.
There's so many pieces of this that isn't fair. These were the big people decisions, and now you have to pay the price for it. Mm-hmm. That's the truth, right? And so it's like holding space for that doesn't mean you have to fix it, because you can't. You can't do that, right? So I think that that is where we get messed up sometimes often as parents or step-parents, is that we don't want our kids to be upset. Whenever I ask anybody this question, you know, what is your greatest wish for your child? Historically, and even now, we say this all the time, I just want them to be happy. And the truth of the matter is nobody's happy all the time, right? Yeah. We don't wake up in the morning and we're just so fucking happy with our bodies. Like, oh my God, I'm so grateful. Or I'm so happy with my husband. You know, I'm so grateful I'm here. No, we're not. I'm not fucking happy all the time. And our children are supposed to feel sad and scared and disconnected and that this world is unfair. I want them to feel safe enough to feel all of those emotions in your presence. And particularly as a stepmom or a stepfather or stepparent, period, your job isn't to fix it. When you get really good at holding space for it, you then become the safe place to land, because they can just put it there and you could say, tell me more. Here's three other words that help all the time. What's the hardest part? What am I missing? I say this to my kids all the time. Do you know that I've never been the parent of an 11-year-old twin girl? I'm new here. How am I doing? Right? And this is so true for so many step-parents. Gosh, I bet I'm messing this up a lot.
Yeah.
I've never been here before. Give me the goods.
I love talking to step-moms about being vulnerable, right? Just being vulnerable with your step-kids, be like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is how this feels for me. How does this feel for you? like, let's all just be human instead of assume that everyone knows what the heck they're doing, because no one does.
Yeah. And it's just so tricky, I think, you know, and I love your work and I love that you create spaces, you know, for women and men who sort of are in this place of just wanting to love so desperately and do the right thing and say the right thing and still keep a relationship together where, you know, the commitment to your own personal children, what that feels like. It's a bond that nobody knows. You can't make that up. Even if you love their dad or you love their mom, right? This is a pretty sacred space. And I think acknowledging that is so critically important. Being able to be like, I wasn't there from the beginning, and no matter what I do will make me.
Mm-hmm. That's huge to acknowledge.
I wasn't there. I wasn't there from the beginning. And so don't try to be.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know all the things.
Yeah.
Because you weren't there. That's okay. You get to know all the things in the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Right? So trying to rewrite a history that isn't yours to rewrite is sometimes there's some freedom in that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I love that.
And it doesn't mean that there wasn't good memories, because you've heard all of the hard memories, typically speaking, you know, of your now partner, but those aren't the same memories their children have. And there's also a lot of great memories that your spouse likely has that aren't safe or necessarily part of the story that comes into your marriage now, right? So people are hard to hate close up.
Yeah. I have conversations with stepmoms and they're like, oh my gosh, he is so miserable with his marriage. She was such a bitch. She did this, she did that, da da da. And I'm like, probably okay, like on those times. Like there were situations where that may be the case. However, they were together, like say, for example, 8 years. It wasn't all bad. They had great date nights. They had great getaways. They had moments together. They had great memories. And I've even said this to my husband before, like, no, you had great times with her. Like you guys were married for a long time together and it was not all bad. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we just tend to remember things to fit the narrative that we have right now that will make us feel better. But I want to kind of jump over to acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
I love when you talk about just the power of acknowledgement. I was listening to a podcast and you're talking about it kind of in everyday life, right? Just acknowledging people, seeing people, like letting them know that you see them as a human being. How powerful could that be in the co-parenting space? Maybe you're dealing with an ex or you're dealing with, you know, issues with your stepkids or stuff coming up. I just kept thinking about just in these conflict situations or higher conflict situations, how could we just acknowledge the other person and make that practice just to kind of humanize everyone?
Okay, Jamie. This is, and I cannot say this clearly enough. This is your most underutilized superpower in this space. Your ability to acknowledge the villainized other will single-handedly create a safer space for your children and your stepchildren. It doesn't mean you have to condone or support or even agree with the other human. But when you have the healthy capacity to acknowledge them in whatever you're able to do that in. And listen, the ones who need it the most are the hardest to give it to.
Mm-hmm.
When you are able to say things like, she told me all about this story. What a phenomenal mom you are. Thanks for sending those things. I'm glad you made that with them. This looks so amazing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
As a stepmom to hear that story, right? Let's say that, you know, for example, right, you're the stepmom to my children. And I had the capacity to be able to say, you know, James, Kyle came home yesterday and he told me that you read him stories before bed. I know bedtime is so hard for him. And I haven't been sleeping this whole week when he's been at your house because I hope he's not. The fact that you were there reading stories with him just makes me feel so much better. Thank you for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And sometimes we then get offended. Like, of course I would fucking do that. Like I am the, you know, whatever. But when you can take that and be like, you know, because all we want, and although we get it in the stories, now she's just in it for the money. She doesn't give a shit about the kids. Like be very careful about the narratives that then impact the way that you, some of the healthiest situations with kids are when step parents can be in the same room together.
Mm-hmm.
And not only just tolerate, but do their very best to acknowledge. And people will say this to me all the time. It takes two. I've tried. Da, 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 da. Good. Don't stop trying.
Mm-hmm.
Because your babies and your step babies are watching and they miss very little. So when you're at the hockey rink or the soccer pitch and you can give a compliment or you can say, take these home to mom, right? If she wants them, absolutely, you know, like those kind of things, being very diligent, even about protecting in the face of dad saying things like, oh my God, what the fuck is wrong with your mom? And you being able to be like,
Yeah.
That's, We're in this together. You know, it goes a long way as these babies are going, just a second, who's at the helm here?
Yeah.
You know? And it's so hard. And like, listen to me when I say this. I understand that it is the hardest ask for so many people to lean in to the other co-parent. Get it. If you don't have the capacity all day long, I full permission, because some of the most hurtful things happens when you're trying to navigate children between two people who I promise you 99% of the time have it, the intention is great. Mm-hmm. The perception is usually not.
Yeah.
And I've very rarely met anybody who wants to hurt their own children, right? Intentionally, not one time. When we lose access to the best parts of ourselves, we do and say things that in those moments comes from not the best parts of ourselves. And when we regulate, that's where our guilt and our shame and our remorse live. And even if you don't see it face to face to another, I promise you, they feel it. And when we can do our very best to sort of drop our shoulders and lean into that and know that they're doing the best they can with what they have, it's easier, you know? And here's the other thing that I think a lot of step moms, and I've heard this a little more with stepdads, but have conversations, because we come into the perception of that relationship rarely good. You know, rarely the person we marry will talk about their ex like, she was the best fucking thing. Like, amazing. You know what I mean? Like, God damn it, I miss her. Oh, yeah. Shoot. You know, like rarely, like she was so good at, she was such a good cook. And she was like, you know, they're not allowed to talk about those or not allowed, or they, you know.
Well, you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, turns out. So you get this very skewed opportunity. And some of my best couples that I've ever worked with is that when, you know, stepmom will come to me and be like, actually, she's remarkable. Mm-hmm. There's so many great things. I can see, you know, this and this and this, but like, she loves her babies. Here's what I really enjoy about her. Like, she's funny. Those things, that bigness. And I don't give a shit about the other person, to be honest with you. All I care about is you. If you feel that in your bones, you then have so much more energy to give to your current blended family. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. If you are spending 80% of your time fighting the emotions that as a group you bring to the table, what a fucking waste.
Totally.
What a waste. What a waste for those babies. What a waste for your, you are essentially creating a relationship in a toxic triad, because then the ex is the only thing that keeps you together, because that's the only thing that you fight about. That's the only thing that you make up about. Let's get her. Let's get her. Let's get her. That's so sad to me.
Well, yeah. And everyone is dealing with their own struggles and their own stuff. And say, for example, you're in a situation where mom isn't really showing up the way that you think she should be showing up. Maybe she's not, just in your perspective, killing it in the mom department. Maybe she's dealing with a lot of hurt and grief and all of these things, right? As stepmoms, it's really easy. And I've, you know, I'm not immune to this. We're all human. We get into this where you get a little judgmental and like you're judging the ex and you want to be the better house and all the things. Instead of judging, have a little empathy for what everyone's going, because everyone has their stuff, and think about what they may be going through and how that may be hard for them, instead of kind of like almost feeling glory in their suffering.
Oh, I know, right?
And how can you support? And how can you support them in that moment? Like, how can you be a team in that way? And again, it's like you're saying, you don't have to agree with them.
Yeah.
You don't have to agree with how they're parenting, how they're showing up, what they're dealing with, or how they respond to you. They may make your life a living hell sometimes. But just having that empathy and grace for the human experience can go so far. And I wish someone would have really told me that, like, those first couple of years. Mm-hmm. Because often when you're feeling insecure, and stepmoms often feel insecure, we feel like an outsider, we feel like we're trying to find our place. So then when shit hits the fan over there, we're like, we got it over here, right? Like, we're the good house, right? You know, you're almost like, well, it's human, right? But you have to catch yourself in that, catch your ego in those situations and be like, okay, come on. I was just saying, I was on a podcast the other day. I was talking about all the things I used to judge my husband's ex for. Like there's a whole list of them. I want to write a blog post about it. So when I first came in, I was really trying to be the perfect stepmom. And I was 26 years old too. I was like a baby and I had these three kids. Everyone thought I was crazy. Turns out I really was, but I was just really trying to like prove to everyone that I was going to rock this, right? Total control freak. And just judged her, just little things, right? Like how neat her drawers were, because I moved into the house they lived. Not having done photo albums for the kids, like she just had all the photos developed and she'd never done any. I'm like, who doesn't have a baby book, right? So I'm just like judging all these things. The list of things that I judged her for, I swear to God, I have done each one of those and I'm worse.
Yeah. Right?
And it's just like becoming a parent is such a humbling experience, right? Uh-huh, and you're, uh-huh. You realize like, we've been together for 12. I just did my first photo album. I don't have a wedding album. I don't have a baby album. Like I just developed 500 photos and threw them all into this old school book just because I felt like at some point I had to, right?
Yeah.
But yet I judged that.
Oh.
Like we got to catch ourselves in those moments. Like we're all really just human beings.
And people are really hard to hate close up, you know? And I think that especially in the beginning, you know, when somebody comes into your own space where your hopes and dreams were being built, it's going to be very difficult to be able to put that guard down, right? And I mm-hmm. think grace in that way means that, you know, there really does need to be this sense of like, this is going to take some time, but this is probably the most important relationship in this new story is mm-hmm. your relationship with the co-parent. Mm-hmm. It is probably the single most important relationship, probably even more so than the person you married.
So hard, but yes.
I know. And I mean, I'm not a step parent. So, you know, you can take every word and throw it out the window. I've worked with so many people who just get their lives stolen because they spend so much time and energy trying to prove the other one right or wrong or one up or be better or to no end. Mm-hmm. You will not win. Mm-hmm. You will not win. And so, you certainly lose the capacity to create a safe and healthy and connected home. And you being able to afford as much grace and empathy and kindness to the other co-parent is the greatest freedom and the greatest gift you can give your children.
Mm-hmm. So good. Okay. Last question I have for you. This is, I was scrolling through your Instagram and an interesting conversation on my Instagram the other day about boundaries and got some pushback because people are boundaries in the co-parenting space. I think sometimes boundaries are used the wrong way. We have different expectations on them, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I want you to unpack this for me as we wrap up. So boundaries are about you. If the intent is to change the behavior of another, a boundary turns into a disappointing, unachievable standard you're not able to uphold.
Amen. Did I write that?
You wrote that. Tell me more.
I fucking love that. God, that's good.
You're like, God, I'm good.
I really am. Just joking. Not really. So this is a Brené Brown quote that totally changed my life about boundaries. Okay. The most generous amongst us are the most boundaried. And what that means is if I am not doing everything I can to get back to the best parts of myself, I'm going to be a bitch. Hands down. So boundaries for me in a co-parenting situation would look like, I'm going to need to take lots of breaths before I step out of the car and, you know, transfer the kids. I can't be the one to do that, honey. Not because I don't want to help, but I don't want to make this worse. And every time we get there, I'm not good in that situation. And I know she hates it. So let's not do that. I need to create that boundary so that I can stay in a place when they come back through the door, I'm ready to receive them and hear all the stories about how great their mama is. I'm going to hang on to those. But I'm going to need to be able to do this. I cannot be in that transition place because I want to be better for them when they get home. Okay. You know, whatever that boundary is really for you. When you start creating ultimatums, the boundary is she cannot come into our driveway. She needs, I don't know why I'm talking like this, but anyway.
No, it's on point. Keep going.
She cannot come into our driveway. She has to drop them off at the street. Well, that is not a fucking boundary. That's an ultimatum. Because is that saving you that she's not driving onto your driveway? No, you are trying to get her back in her place. Do not be a cow, right? If you can't then meet her out there, that's okay, baby girl. To be able to save the sanctity of my sanity I'm going to need your mama here to receive those babies, or I'm going to need you to come home from work to make sure that you could do that, because I don't think that I will be better. I will be able to stay in that place if she comes out screaming, right? And I get why she does, right? This was her dream. Mm-hmm. I'm opening her drawers, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're creating a whole story. I get it. Like, there's no other place I'd want to be. But we have to think about protecting. I want to have access to the best parts of me so that I can be ready for those babies. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to watch me get upset with their mom. The boundary, the expectation for me is for me to protect me, to be the best that I can. That's what I need to do. You know, other boundaries look like, you know, when they're away, I want to make sure that, you know, they connect to you so that I'm not the go-between, between like every time that's really distressing, I turn into this lunatic. In order for us to not have that happen, here's what I need to do. So we really, I think I struggled so hard in this place of boundaries for so long, particularly as a psychologist, because I was like, I don't have any boundaries. You can call me at any time. I'm going to put kids to bed on the unit at 11 o'clock at night. Like, well, I need to be available. I mean, we're all about connection. You don't need no boundaries. That's when boundaries in my head was like sort of building this wall around myself to keep everybody else out. Boundaries are to keep the best parts of you in, so that you can continue to give and to serve and to be your best with other people. But if you don't look after you in that regard, you will struggle significantly, mm-hmm. right? So the most generous among us are the most boundaried. Mm-hmm.
And so if someone is just kind of going back to my Instagram post, people were struggling with is, you know, you can have boundaries around communication with the ex, things like that, and say like, I'm going to communicate through email. The text messages coming up on my phone trigger me and make it so it's difficult for me to show up as my best. Like, you can request those types of communication too.
For sure. For sure. I would just be like, in this situation, you know, when I'm getting 25,000 text messages a day, or you're worried about the babies or whatever, you know, I get it. You should know about your kids. So here's the best way that we can communicate, which means that, you know, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to shut my notifications off, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to just let you know that I won't be able to access those messages until 4 o'clock, until I get away from my whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, here's the 911. Here's the direct call that if there's an emergency situation, you have access to them. That's your boundary. Mm-hmm. That's not giving an ultimatum, right?
Yeah.
And then I now know that there may be 150,000 messages. Okay. Mm-hmm. But during the run of that day, I had the capacity to say, no, I can put it down. And when I open that email, okay, 120. That's what I was thinking. All right, what's the deal? You know, it really is that space of staying regulated in that moment that allows you then to show up better. And no doubt it'll crush our soul many times. No doubt we turn into all of those things. But I think really considering what boundaries do for you, and not, you can't change the other's behavior by setting a limit that will teach them a lesson. Nobody learns that way.
Yep. Backfires.
It does.
Amazing. Thank you so much. This has been so good. I feel like I just had, I'm just like a motivational talk / therapy, all the things. You are such a gem. Where can everyone find you?
Well, I'm just so grateful for your work. I would love your community to land in ours. You know, everything is at drjodycarrington.com, but we're often on Instagram. I have a podcast called Everyone Comes From Somewhere.
And it's so good.
Thank you. Where we talk about stories every week. And I think it's really this idea that we all have the capacity for good, even the people that are hard to see that in most days. And once we know that, it allows us to kind of drop our shoulders and do our best work. Mm-hmm. So thank you for having me. It was such an honor.
So good. That's it for this one. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if this episode resonated with you, I'd be so grateful if you could share it with someone in your life who you think could benefit from it. And if you haven't already left a rating and a review on iTunes, it really is the best way to support the show. And if you're craving more real talk and coaching and community, be sure to check out my membership, the Kickass Stepmom Community. Head to www.kickassstepmom.com to learn more.